When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Howdy, hey, and hello there. Welcome to another episode of Weird Finance, a podcast dedicated to helping creative entrepreneurs feel a little less weird about money, one conversation at a time. I'm your host, Paco de Leon, and on this week's episode, I'm chatting with Caitlin Koppel and Holly Conti, the partners of Full Swing PR. The world always feels uncertain, but lately it's feeling a bit more off kilter. An election year tends to do that, but we're also experiencing a lot of geopolitical unrest, war, high prices, and high interest rates. All these things are outside of our control, and yet we still have to go to work and run our businesses. My guests today run a public relations firm called Full Swing PR. Now, I went into this conversation with Caitlin and Holly with the bias that PR feels ornamental or unnecessary in the grand scheme of things. But I left the conversation feeling inspired and hopeful. As you'll hear Caitlin and Holly say, PR is an opportunity to amplify our voices, which in turn can be a vehicle for power and money. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Caitlin and Holly. Caitlin and Holly of Full Swing PR, welcome to Weird Finance, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us. I love talking about finance, but I know we're talking about PR today, but it's a great mix of the two.
We'll definitely do a little bit of both. How does that sound?
Good.
So before we dig in and I, you know, ask you to convince me and all of our listeners why we should care about PR, I would love to get a bit of the Full Swing PR origin story. How did you guys get started and how did you folks become partners?
Well, it's not the most intentional of stories. We were working at the same agency back in I started in 2017. Holly had been there for a while. And in February 2019, things kind of took a shift. A new managing director was hired and he was kind of questioning whether PR had a role at the agency. And I was the main breadwinner at that time in my family and had a 2-year-old little boy who's now 7. And I was 35. And I think there was something about all of those factors that just made it feel like now's the time to just, you know, go do my own thing and leave that place and see what I could do on my own. So I did it and ended up building the business basically in a weekend. We just had our 5th anniversary, so it's very exciting. And yeah, and I left with one client, came along with me. And by the end of 2 weeks, I think I had 3 more. So I was on track to more than make my old salary, made my old salary in 5 months. And around that time was starting to, you know, to think about like, what does it look like to add team members? And of course, Holly had been involved from the beginning because she was a good friend and my work wife at this past agency. And she was kind of moonlighting for me, helping out with social media and admin stuff and kind of like whatever I couldn't kind of handle on my own. Yeah. And then she became the first employee in 2020 and part owner in 2021. Yeah.
So I have partnership top of mind for me right now. I'm thinking about taking on partners in various lines of business. And so I would love to know, how did you guys decide that partnership was the vibe? How did you decide to get professionally married after kind of dating for a while?
I think, again, in true origin story of Full Swing, it was maybe not the most intentional of choices even at that. We were just like, Caitlin and I have really similar, I think, values. We have similar work ethic and drive. And yet at the same time, my weaknesses are her strengths and vice versa. And so we play really well together in the workspace, and we've always just collaborated really well. When I came into Full Swing as the first employee, we tripled the business's revenue that year. And then we continued to do that year after year. And we were like, wow, our partnership really works. And we both care about this the same amount. You know, we both are so drawn to the mission. Even though it was Caitlin's baby, I really took it on, kind of like she took on my real kid. She was like, "You're real kid, Holly. I'm part their mom." And I kind of feel like I did that with her business a little bit too. And then it just kind of naturally made sense, I think, for us to partner and do it together. Partnership is, I think now we realize how much of it, like now that we're in it 5 years in, we're like, oh, wow, that was a really big commitment. In the moment, it felt natural. And I think it still does. And we have so much more fun together than I think either of us would doing it on our own.
I think I would just break HR all the time. So I need a business partner. So I can speak the real with Holly, which I need. And I think also just having small kids, you know, through the life of this business, our kids have been growing up kind of in it. And I think it allowed us to divide and conquer a lot. And in some ways, job share almost, because like we can just figure out, okay, these are the things that light me up. These are the things that light you up. These are things that will take you 10 minutes that would take me 3 hours. And just get it done, because it is a lot to run a company. And I don't know that, you know, through COVID and just all the things that have happened in the past 5 years in the world, I don't know that I would have stuck with it without Holly by my side. Yeah. It's a lot more fun with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also, we're a young company, which means it can feel hard to step away. When you have a business partner, like we can balance that for one another. So now that we're in this fifth year, we're both kind of scheming about taking more time off than we had in the last 5 years. And like, what would it look like if I took 3 weeks off in the summer or, you know, something like that. And I think it would be a lot harder to do that if we didn't have someone else who could kind of carry that workload when we step away.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, everything that you're talking about, complementary skill sets where, you know, one person who's a partner can own it and carry that and I don't have to worry about it. That is one of the reasons why I'm looking at partnership. This idea that you're describing where it's like more than one person is really giving of lots of fucks about the growth of the company, pushing to grow it. That is very attractive to me. So I'd love to know, you know, as I'm thinking about partnership, what kind of insights or advice do you folks have for me?
Well, I think it's really important to go back to your values and really identify what your personal values are and your company's values are. And I think having a vision for what you're willing to do and what you're not willing to do is also important. Like we really wanted to hit that $1 million mark. Now we're going into our third year as a $1 million, hopefully soon multi-$1 million agency. And now we can slow our roll a little bit and focus more on sustainability and stability, because like we did the thing that only 2% of women-owned businesses do. And that was important to us just, you know, for the sake of like doing the thing that can't be done by a lot of people and being able to have that mic drop moment at the end. But now I think we're much more interested in profitability and stability and having, you know, getting to our ultimate goal of having more options for ourselves in the business, which means getting to, you know, a $5 to $10 million mark so that we can decide what's the best for ourselves as individuals and the business. Should we decide to sell it or just draw a salary and kind of walk away, hire a CEO, et cetera? We'll see what the future holds. But yeah.
That's beautiful. Amazing. Optionality. I love that. I love what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
To me, that's what money is all about, is like freedom, right? And options. Like I don't consider myself a super materialistic person, but I definitely like freedom and I don't like being told what to do. I'm an Enneagram 8. Oh,
that's amazing. So an Enneagram 8, for anyone who's listening and is not familiar with the Enneagram, I believe Enneagram is based off of your birthday, or do you take a test? You take a test,
right?
You
take a test.
Okay, yeah. So you take a test and it's some kind of like personality test, kind of like the Myers-Briggs, kind of like the Clifton Strengths. And it gives you like an archetype. And the 8 archetype is called the Challenger. And the Challenger hates being told what to do. And, you know, that's, it's the personality where it's like kind of the devil's advocate personality, right? And I know 8 very well because I am a 9 with an 8 wing.
Oh, yeah. I don't know very many 9s.
I'm a peacemaker. 9.
Yeah.
All they optimize for, everything they do in their lives is for inner peace. And that can cause a lot of problems if you don't know that about yourself. And for a long time, I didn't know that about myself. So I was like, someone is disturbing my inner peace. I'm never talking to you again, like cutting you off, you know? But I have 8 tendencies, which is a challenger, right? Which is confrontational. Yeah. So like me as a person is dealing with that inner conflict at all times where it's like, I really want inner peace, but I really have to say something to this person. So I feel you. I love 8s. I like to hide behind 8s and like, can you know, let them complain about the drink that was wrongly made at the restaurant that I'm at, you know?
I love an 8 too. I like surrounding myself with 8s.
Yeah, they like protect you. They tell you how it is. You know, they're not afraid of conflict. And I think because I don't like it, it's like nice to be around somebody to remind me like, hey, you know what? Quit being a little baby. I understand you think you're going to die if you confront this, but you're not. So let's do it.
It's so funny that we started going to the personal reflections of personality tests and Enneagram, because to your question, the point that you brought up a moment ago of like, what advice would you give me in partnership? I think selecting a partner who is very self-reflective and has strong social emotional skills. Caitlin and I are like, Full Swing loves a personality test. When we hire someone, we're like, what's your astrology? Tell us your, you know, Myers-Briggs, all the things. We want to know all of them. But I think even as partners, the two of us are always doing our own self work and trying to understand ourselves more. And it leads to even like when we're in points where sometimes there's a challenging conversation, I think because we're both working on ourselves and also really care about the other person's emotional well-being, it allows us to get past, you know, points of friction because neither of us have like big walls up. We're open to talk because we've worked on that for a long time. I think that's important.
Holly's going to be writing my dating profile. I'm clearly way better in business than personal life. That's another podcast. Thank you for that validation.
Okay. I feel like, Holly, you've left some breadcrumbs there and I'm going to ignore them for a second, but I do want to go down that path about, you know, being like emotional awareness and all the things that one has to do personally in order to make a lot of money, be successful in business, right? Because everything is intertwined. And I want to take a step back and I want to focus a little bit more on Full Swing PR. One of the things that has me really excited about your organization, besides the fact that you two are lovely and, you know, we both belong to, you know, multiple online programs together. So there's a lot of overlap. Clearly we have a lot of shared values, but you've decided to create an organization that represents or gives the microphone and amplifies voices of underrepresented people. So we're talking women, BIPOC, and members of the LGBTQ+ community. I want to know, you know, how you made that decision and then what kinds of unique, you know, challenges and opportunities that kind of clientele represents for you.
I think you should. It started with you.
Yeah. So initially I wanted to focus on women leaders. And I think part of that was like, I didn't want to work with assholes. And I think if you work with women that you'll have a better chance of not encountering people who are jerks. But then I think, you know, white women can also be really problematic. I'm queer. I think that, you know, we need to make sure that white feminism isn't kind of the dominant force in our world, which it definitely is. And so I think to me, to really change who holds power in our democracy and in our communities, we have to look at diversity more broadly than just lifting up white women who tend to be the folks who are scaling businesses of the women folk, right? So I was like, how do we take this a step further and really start to look at who's not represented, who's not sourced in the media, who's not seen as an expert in their field, and really lift them up and help give them the tools. Because that to me is all PR is. Like, I'm not stoked about writing a press release necessarily. Like, I'm interested in power, right? Power and money, and who holds power and money. And PR is a vehicle to get those to different people. So that's what lights me up about it.
Yeah, we recently read a stat that only 36% of nationwide news sources are women. And we know, you know, most of those are probably cis, straight women, white, definitely. And worldwide, it's even less than that. I think it's at 26%. And when you look at that and you think, like, as we're all ingesting media and reading the news and hearing stories, if we're only hearing 36% of women, and that's not even representative of our communities. You know, how is that impacting, as Caitlin said, who has power, who's being seen and heard, and doesn't sit right with us in the world that we're trying to build for ourselves and for our children.
And I think just like going back to the old adage, you can't be what you can't see. I really believe that. And growing up queer and closeted in like what most people would think of as a pretty rural town in Idaho. It's more of a suburb now, a very conservative place, you know, very dominated by evangelicals and LDS folks who don't necessarily see LGBTQ people as full humans. It was really challenging. And then I think even just once I came out, just and exploring like, what does it mean to be more femme, or what does it mean to try to be more masculine presenting, and trying to fit in within the queer community has just been challenging. And I think there's just not a lot of role models for people who are as fabulous as me. So I like to try to be that for others.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's been interesting too, growing up queer and watching media landscape change over the years, and realizing like, oh, we're still so young. Like, you know, like the way that we've been represented out in the world, there's still so much that needs, there's so many, right? Before I feel like there's one archetype, right? You're like wearing cargo shorts and you're shopping at a Home Depot, right?
Softball.
Such a trope for exactly, yeah. And it's been so nice to see that, oh, okay, wow, there's so many different types of queer, and slowly but surely they are getting their voice in media, and, you know, from television to film to now, you know, things like PR. And I gotta say, I don't give a shit about PR, but now you guys have got me excited about it through this mission. So that's amazing.
Why don't you give a shit? Tell us.
Because it feels like a necessary evil, right? And sometimes I feel like my idea of PR is like spinning a story, and it feels like being fake in a weird way, you know? Like, and, you know, sometimes I get messages from, you know, the PR folks, and they're cold. They're not personal. I would much rather get a message from the person who I would be having on the show, or, you know what I mean? So I don't know. It just doesn't feel like always there's a real connection in it. And it feels like, you know, we're all trying to get something out of somebody through PR, you know what I mean? And so that's, I think, why I kind of look at it in that manner. But I know that it's important, you know, over time being in business, I've realized like, wow, I've gotten business from being on NPR's podcast. That's pretty cool. I should probably keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting about it too, it goes back to why we chose to work with the businesses that we work with, right? Is that everyone that represents our client roster has something to say that's meaningful, is trying to make a meaningful impact in the world. And all we're helping them do is tell that story. And, you know, as business owners, we're trying to grow our business. Again, like everyone that we work with is trying to grow their business, not because they're greedy assholes who are trying to get a lot of money. They're trying to build wealth. A lot of the women on our client roster identify as a person of color. And oftentimes their income is also supporting a whole stream of other people in their family. And, you know, by telling your story in the media, all you're doing is growing your business. We do this exercise with folks sometimes where we say like, pull up your best performing social media channel. Even some of the people that we work with who have 10,000, 20,000, or even 100,000 people on, say, Instagram, they have maybe 20,000 on their email list, 30,000 on their email list, or a couple thousand or a couple hundred, right? That's all they're reaching when they are putting their content out. And on social media, you know, they're reaching like 8% of the people who follow them, right? On email list, you have a better chance of reaching the people who are on your email list. But it's a small amount. And to grow your business, what you really need is a much larger audience. You need the people who you've built your product or services for to know that you exist, because you built them for a reason. You built them to help people. And so all we're trying to do is get your well-intentioned product or service out into the eyes, ears, and hands of the people that it was meant to serve. And you can do that through PR so much quicker, because if you get in NPR, right, NPR has spent billions of dollars and many years building their audience. And so you get to take advantage of all of that and reach the people that you are trying to serve much faster.
All right. I'm convinced, Holly. I know that PR matters, and slowly but surely I am unpacking that belief that it's icky and yucky and whatever, you know?
I mean, I think the other thing that's maybe different about our approach is like, sometimes I feel like we're the girls next door of PR because we're just like very approachable. And like, I think we're generally nice humans. And I think that we really believe that that's true with our clients. And that if you can just find people who are really committed to their own authenticity and like leaning into their values and just being who they are, I think the media craves that. I think consumers crave that, right? We see that with all of the brand surveys about, you know, wanting to shop with brands that align with your values, all of that. So I think the values-based approach and really helping people see that their superpowers being like the you-iest you that they can be, right?
I like that.
It's kind of magical.
Yeah, it's not about spin. It's about bringing your humanness forward and sharing.
And doing that with confidence too, you know, because I think a lot of times underrecognized folks just have never been told that, like, it's awesome that you're queer. It's awesome that you're Black. It's awesome that you're fat. Like, what is the thing that is like different about you? And how do you own that and step into your power and do that publicly? It's a really fun challenge.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to like listen to a hype song really loudly right before I do an interview, just because I need to be about my own shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's your hype song?
You know, I have like a whole playlist and it varies. For a long time, it was Lizzo. Sometimes it's the Rolling Stones. Sometimes it's Tupac and DMX. It really depends on, you know, what kind of vibe I'm going for.
Love it.
Okay, so let's define some terms. So how do you guys define what PR is?
So I think of PR as anything that impacts how the outside world views you or your brand. So it's very broad in my mind. I think the world that we deal in the most is earned media. And we always lead with publicity and earned media just being like media that you don't pay for, that you don't own, that you don't control, that you go out and earn, right? By saying, hey, I've got this newsworthy thing going on. Y'all should cover it, right? And so we are a publicity forward agency, but we do get all up in your funnel because we know small business owners, like those that we work with, at the end of the day, sales is really what matters most to them. And so to have a healthy pipeline and to make sure that we're converting or at least engaging in building that pipeline through the impressions that you might get from a top tier media publication that you happen to be featured in, like we want to see you do something with that attention, right? It's not enough just to get it. We want to see it actually fuel your business to drive sales.
I love that. So your PR is for pretty much every business owner, every person that's in business. How can people get started? What are the first steps to getting PR?
Go ahead, Caitlin. This is you.
Okay. So, well, I would say, first of all, there's lots of freebies on our website. So if you go to fullswingpr.com, you can download your little heart out and learn some stuff that way. But for those listening, I think one mistake that we see people make, even businesses that are, you know, well into the seven figures, like often haven't really thought much about local PR. And they, you know, we all are working remotely now, or at least a lot of us are, a lot of our clients are, but we still live in a place, right? And we live in a place that often has a local business journal. Like here in Boise, where I live, we have the Idaho Business Review, and they often want to do Q&As with CEOs. They want to run guest commentaries from CEOs. They have all kinds of awards like Accomplished Under 40 and Women of the Year and CEO icons and like all of these opportunities that really are pretty low lift. And so I think if somebody doesn't have the budget to go with an agency yet, like start sniffing out those opportunities in your local community. I think also getting a sense of like, what are the key dates on your calendar year? So like for you, Paco, like it's tax season, right? People are probably freaking out about that. There's probably some rules that have changed, that sort of thing. Like how do you, you know, think about like, what are the top three things that small business owners need to know as they prepare for tax season, and then figure out who covers business in your community and go out and pitch them, you know, or figure out if you want to reach a broader audience, like what are the other kind of small business finance podcasts where you should be showing up to help educate folks about what they need to do? Because really you're just helping people. You're helping people on steroids. That's what PR is all about, right? You're adding value to them. You're telling them what they need to know to live a better life or run a more profitable business. And you're just reaching more of them.
I love that. Holly, do you want to add anything to that, or was that just perfect the way it was?
I mean, I think Caitlin dropped the mic, really. What's interesting about, again, going back to our partnership, so Caitlin is the traditional PR person, like that is where her background is. My background is in account services and then like in the digital space. I really, again, that's where the funnel comes into play. And so when we're working with people, Caitlin said all of the right things and where you want to start with PR. What you don't want to do is start with PR because you need sales. Like if sales is the number one problem that you need to solve, make sure first before you start PR that you know what product you're selling, how you're selling it, who you're selling it to, and that you've actually tested it. You have a sales process that works first, because PR is gasoline, pouring gasoline on a fire. If you, you know, put PR out there before your fire is smoldering, you know, you pour it on ash, nothing's going to happen. And so it's really important that you have your sales piece really baked and in place before you start elevating your company.
Yeah, we often say that people come to us with like one of two problems, sometimes both, but usually they have a positioning problem or an audience problem. And so the positioning problem is kind of what Holly's getting at. Like, who are you selling to? What are you selling them? Do they actually want to buy it? Like, what does your funnel look like? All of those pieces. So it's really important to make sure that you are addressing those pieces that come with positioning and having a really strong brand position before you start trying to scale to reach a bigger audience.
And then you said the first problem is a positioning problem, and the second problem was
an audience problem.
Oh, an audience problem.
Or scale problem.
Got like it. They have, people just don't know that they're there. So you just need to get in front of more people.
Right.
Like I would say you have this, Paco, because like there's no reason that you shouldn't be a multi-million-dollar business. Like you have this incredible book, like you've had like really big media wins. And so more people just need to know about you. And you have a great email newsletter.
Oh,
I read
you.
It.
Oh my gosh. So many wonderful compliments. I don't even know which one to address first. Thank you, Caitlin.
I just want to bring you inner peace, Paco.
There it is. You want to confront what is going to allow me to have inner peace. I love that.
Yes. More money. More power.
It's true.
More
it's
peace.
True. Yeah. More chilling. And, you know, that comes from actually more money and less worry about my pipeline, right?
Mom, I just saw the cutest outfit that Kelly from the TV show American High School Kids was wearing. Can I please get this outfit? I looked it up and it cost $50.
Well, you know your mom and I just got you a new outfit. That was all we budgeted for this month, so we'll have to wait until next month.
What? Mom, but I need this outfit. Can't you just put it on the credit card?
Carly, that's an example of exactly how you should not use a credit card. Credit cards can be a great tool for grown-ups to use, but using them to buy non-essential things that you cannot afford is a recipe for financial disaster. You're borrowing money and you have to pay a very, very high fee as you pay it back.
Wait, a credit card is borrowed money and you have to pay it back? Oh, fuck that. I didn't know that's how credit cards worked. Now I know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Weird Finance.
Weird Finance. Weird Finance. Weird Finance.
Okay, I want to know who your ideal client is. Talk to them right now and tell them we're here for you.
So we mostly work with businesses that are serving other businesses, and most of them are in the professional services led by somebody who's not your typical, you know, white cis het bro. But we, you know, the occasional dude we love to have in the mix.
Diversity
as long as you're
there.
Down with what we believe. And then I think the other piece is that they have to have some type of business already. So we're not working with the solopreneurs. Most of our clients are 2 to 3 million in gross annual revenue, trying to scale to 10 million or bigger as fast as possible, and really want to lean into PR to do that because they know PR is the most credible way to do that. And it has a much higher ROI than ads.
Yeah, we tried to serve the DIY. And so again, 5 years in business, we've tried on different target audiences throughout the years. We've looked at people who were, you know, in that first couple of years of their business and trying to grow when they're doing that more DIY approach. And where we landed, what we really found was there is this sweet spot of business owners who are not being serviced from marketing, right? There's like a lot of DIY stuff out there. And then there's like, there's really expensive PR and marketing for, you know, big, huge corporations. Then there's these businesses that are grossing a couple of million and need marketing support. They're not good at marketing. They're, you know, law firms or, you know, in DE&I, and they are really good at what they do, but they know they need marketing to get to their, to get to 10 million, right? And there's not there. We saw that there wasn't a lot of good options for them. And so what we created was it's a 12-month retainer where we essentially act as the marketing team, like an in-house marketing team for these businesses who just need to know that their marketing is taken care of. So it's not just PR. We also do their email. We also support them with social media. We also look at their funnel, right? And we're there so that they can keep doing what they're really good at and grow, because they do not have the time to do the DIY stuff, but they do have the money to pay us, right? And so we ended up going, you know, it was a strategic business decision to start actually going after those businesses who can afford a higher retainer, help us grow our businesses, and really help solve a problem that they have no idea how to solve.
And they don't really want to learn. Like, I don't want to go to law school, you know, I want to hire a lawyer. And like, I think some people feel that way about PR, you know? And I think because our approach is so laser focused on tying it back to a healthy pipeline and sales results, like people can easily see the uptick. Like, we've had a client that went from 7 discovery calls a week to over 20. We have another client that worked with us for 6 months and saw 187% in revenue growth. So like, we have the receipts at this point, and it's like, you can either spend $120,000 a year hiring like a communications director who might be really great, right? And that's probably the low end of their salary, by the way. Then you have to pay their benefits. They're probably good at like one thing more than another thing, whether that's they've been a publicist or maybe they know a lot about digital marketing. But with us, you pay that amount and you get a true thought partner, and you get a whole team of folks servicing your every need, and essentially get a whole marketing department for the price of maybe one, you know, senior or mid-level person.
I'm sold. I mean, okay, ever since you mentioned that you think that my problem is an audience problem, I've been thinking, well, what's the solution? And is the solution, is it PR?
Yeah.
I mean, of course we're going to say yes.
The solution is grow your audience. You can do that through paid. That's expensive, right? Like, we work with brands that are spending sometimes $3,000 a month, sometimes $20,000 a month, sometimes $50,000 a month. You're going to grow quick with paid ads, but it's expensive. Mm-hmm. You can grow on TikTok or Instagram or a social channel, but to do that organically without paid ads, that means you have to spend, I mean, on Instagram, like, try to grow on Instagram right now, it's not going to happen. And I could go on a whole tangent on that. On TikTok, you have to be posting like 3 times a day or 3 to 6 times a day for months before you grow. So it's like, that's a lot of time. Whereas PR, again, you're utilizing other people's business, other people's audience to grow. And so it's cheaper, it's quicker, and we think it's the best option. Obviously.
I mean, I think the other thing about social media is we've worked with clients that have a really robust social media following that they're not monetizing at all. And I think it's, you know, they don't own that data either. So we're such big proponents of email marketing, even for traditional businesses that have a brick and mortar. It's like, you've got to stay top of mind and keep educating that client or consumer about what it is that you do to solve their problems so that they think of you and turn to you when they are ready to seek that help.
Doesn't it feel a little bit like everything that is old is new again? Like, I feel like email marketing was like not that
the presidential election. Is that what you're talking
about? Definitely that too. But yeah, like some of these, you know, like TikTok was like real sexy like a few years ago, especially, you know, during COVID 2020, 2021, 2022. And now we're like, no, I think we're just going to care about an email, you know, newsletter again, you know, things that, you know, I think kind of went out of fashion or seem like we're going back to it. Like just running a simple service-based B2B business, like that wasn't that cool. You know, like being an influencer was really cool a few years ago. And now, you know, influencers are like, well, actually I'm not monetizing this. Maybe I should provide a service.
I mean, yeah. Nathan Barry talks about this, and I might be getting the wrong Kardashian, but I know it was Kim Kardashian that was charging like $1 million a post, right, for other brands. And people are like, oh my gosh, you got $1 million for a post. That's so awesome. And she was selling like attention, right? But the real moneymaker in the family is the one that's not that famous. Is it Courtney? Help me out here. The one that has a product line. Chloe? Okay.
Kylie, but they're all famous. They're all super
okay.
Famous.
I don't know any of them except Kim, to be honest. Like, I'm kind of the worst at pop culture. That's why we hire people to help us who are Gen Z. But no, one of the sisters, and Nathan has said this, he's like, it's really smart of them because they've developed $1 billion like product line, and they're the first one in the family to like be a billionaire, right?
He's talking about Kylie. Yeah.
Kylie. Okay. And he says, like, what's the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire? It's about $1 billion. Like, it's a really different scale of what we're talking about here, you know? So I think like trying to challenge yourself to think that way, I think can be really fun. Even if it does feel a bit dreamy as a business owner, like, you know, how do you do the thing that's really going to move the needle as opposed to the one-off that might feel sexy in the moment?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about how you guys grew. You've grown full swing to $1 million in revenue, and you did it in a really short amount of time.
Less than 4 years.
And like you said, that statistic, I forgot about that statistic, that less than 2% of women-owned businesses make $1 million ever?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the context around that too is like really messed up, because women start businesses at a much higher rate than men do, but they hit this kind of glass ceiling around scaling, right? I think the average like amount that a woman-owned business makes is like $30,000 or $40,000. Like, it's terrible. It's not even creating a job for yourself. It's just like, it's basically being poor, right? And so I think that was like a bee in my bonnet. And also, the other thing I want to say is that like women of color start businesses at a much faster rate than even white women do, often out of necessity. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's beyond effed up that like that is our situation. And so I was like, this is going to be my new feminist challenge. I want to do the thing. I don't care what it takes. Like, I was a dog with a bone a little bit on that one.
Yeah. But eight. Now going back to like what's sexy versus what's sustainable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So like the 3 years leading up to, so we hit 7 figures in our third year, and 7 figures was like, we just have to gross that. That's all we want. And now that we're in our third year of being a 7-figure business, now we're like, okay, but how does that feel? Like, how does it mm-hmm. feel for us to be 7-figure business owners? In the last 2 years, we've had 192% growth, which is wild. But now we're like, okay, we want to feel it internally as the owners of those businesses. Maybe we don't care so much about the gross now. Now we care about the net
and margin.
The margin. Yeah. Because I think part of what's helped us scale is that we also have always invested in a team. We invested in a team early. We now have 9 or 8, soon to be 9. It's fluctuating a little bit, full-time employees. And it's so important to, you know, obviously now we have all of those other salaries to protect and to make sure that we, you know, when we bring someone on, that we can sustain that salary for a long time, because it's other people's lives and families now that we're impacting. But now we're focused on not just that sexy 7-figure number, but really what is that net and how can we take a profit and do what we want with it? Again, investing in our team, investing in ourselves, giving ourselves more time, all of that.
So what are you guys shifting, if you don't mind sharing, to be more focused on profit?
I think I told you a little bit about this, Paco, but we have gone through bookkeepers like a model goes through dresses. I don't know. I was something else, but all that was coming to me was dirty. So I'll just leave it there. But we've had a lot of bookkeepers and it was not working. And I'm really happy with where we're at right now. We've had the same accountant for a long time and I've had the same financial advisor for a long time. Love them. And so now our accountant is actually our fractional CFO, and Holly and I got way back into the weeds with the finances of our business because we'd taken a little too far with outsourcing it, and mistakes were made and we weren't really understanding. And so now we're much more in it again. We still have a bookkeeper and we are using one that kind of specializes in online businesses, which I think is really helpful, because even though we are not necessarily a traditional online business, if such a thing exists, we do operate remotely, and it's helpful. And we have employees all over the country and clients all over the country. So it's helpful to have a partner that understands all of that. So,
yeah, I think to Caitlin's point, we almost removed ourselves from our finances last year. Like when we wanted to spend money, we were asking other people if we could, and the data wasn't there. We couldn't really like it. It just got messy. And so
I was asking an eight ball.
Yeah. And we were, cause we were trying to do what they say, which is outsource, you know, and, but now we're trying to find that balance of let's get ourselves back into the finances. So we actually know exactly what's coming in and out, and we understand how this client pays us and how this, you know, those small little things, because like when your operations person leaves, all of a sudden you don't know how this one client pays you, right? Like you, it's our money at the end of the day. We want to know that. But some of the other things we're shifting is, I think this year, in the past, we've set really lofty goals, right? So we had the intention of let's set our goal for 2024 at 2 million. And we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago of like, well, why? And that again would be massive growth. That would be a huge number to hit. So why don't we reduce that number a little bit and try to bring in a couple more clients and keep our team really healthy and keep not burn our team out, not burn ourselves out, and not go after those huge, you know, put 30 discovery calls on our calendars every week. Like, let's try to sign a couple more really aligned, really great clients and pour into our team so that though we have growth, and we'll probably go after those big numbers again. It's not like we're just going to take it easy on growing.
We already have 1.2 in signed contracts, I think, with a couple new ones that we signed already.
Yeah, we just signed two new clients, like pretty, I would say, like pretty
easily.
Peacefully. Yeah. And it's February.
Okay. I honestly couldn't have paid you guys to give a better answer when the answer was bookkeeping. We're caring about our finances. We're caring about looking at the numbers. We're caring about understanding where the money is coming from and where it's going. My little bookkeeper heart is just bursting with joy that you folks are giving lots and lots of dams about the finance side and seeing results.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, I think there's maybe some misunderstanding out there about like how visionaries think versus like how operations and finance people think. And I do think part of our secret sauce has really been that despite being visionaries ourselves, like I don't want to do finance. That would sound like hell to me. Same with ops. However, I have mad respect for those things. And I like really, really want to like pour into and support those resources because I see how much quicker we can get to the big vision when we have those pieces in place.
Yeah,
totally. But the thing that you're getting at that, you know, you can't outsource caring. You have to care. You know what I mean? Like, so you can have somebody, like if your business is a baby, you could have somebody, you know, take care of the baby when you need to be looking at something else. But at the end of the day, you still got to care for that baby, you know, it's your baby.
Yeah.
And maybe outsourcing certain things can help you care for that baby in a way that you wouldn't be able to care for it if you had to do everything. But okay, I want to talk to you folks about like mentally and emotionally what you think is required of you folks and other
folks. I thought you were going to sing the Usher song.
Maybe
mentally,
later. Maybe
spiritually.
If you play the cards
physically,
right.
Emotionally, I'll be like your medicine. You take every dose of me. I was there at the Super Bowl. I wasn't actually there, but I was watching it. I love Usher.
Caitlin.
Oh, thanks.
Caitlin's a party. I say she's a professional fun haver.
I love that. I love that. Well, maybe we can sing Usher at the end if, you know, there's enough demand for it. But I definitely want to know like what kind of work you guys did, you know, to get to 1 million that's maybe less tactical, like less, we hired people, we outsource things. What kind of emotional and mindset things did you have to work on in order to get to a place to earn that revenue?
Yeah, I mean, self-reflection and mindfulness is, I think, the single most important thing that you can do as a career person, not even a business owner, but definitely a business owner. I think as an entrepreneur, your business is almost a reflection every day of what you need to work on personally. And it shows you where your triggers are, where your fears are. And I think you have to lean into those by digging in, journaling, maybe getting extra support. I do a lot of meditation, even just like walking reflections. I also always think that In order to be a strong collaborator, whether it's with a business partner, a team member, a client, you have to be able to come to conversations and admit what you don't know. And I think when your ego is up, when your fear is up, when you have imposter syndrome, you can't do that. And it stops you from collaborating and it stops you from really creating. Because even if you're a business owner with no other partners, you still have to collaborate with your clients, with your audience, with the world. And if you're doing that from a place of, you know, fences up, defenses up, I feel like an imposter, so I'm going to, you know, not ask the questions, then you're doing yourself a disservice because you're stopping yourself from learning. You're stopping yourself from hearing other people's perspectives. And I think it's really important to be able to come to every single day with an open, you know, learning mindset, open heart, open mind, ready to like flow with whatever your business is giving you that day.
Beautiful. A woman after my own heart.
It's a humbling experience. I think another thing that always sticks with me is something our business coach, Rachel Rogers, has said is like the skills that got you to six figures or even to seven figures are not going to be the same skills that get you to eight figures, right? And so there's a lot that we don't know. I think it's important to take pride in like what you've accomplished and that you have gotten yourself to a certain point. And there's, you know, there's something to that, especially like the, I think the inner wisdom of just like listening to yourself and knowing that you did the thing. That's all really important. I think, but you can't underestimate like the fact that you're going to have to learn new skills, right? To get to the next level that you're trying to get to.
Yeah. We both have a pretty strong self-reflection practice, but we also have almost always had a business coach in every year of our business. And the relationships that we've built with our business coach and then with other entrepreneurs who are within, you know, the masterminds that we're in or in the coaching programs that we're in, you know, we're learning from them all of the time too. And that has been, I think, crucial in helping us see what other people are doing and expand our belief in what we could be doing, as well as having someone like a coach vision a bigger, like we think we have big visions. And then our coach is like, no. Actually, you should be hitting for, you know, going for this. And it's really helped us.
I interviewed Rachel several weeks ago. And, you know, of course I was like, I'm going to make this about me. Rachel Rogers is a brilliant coach. I have her. I'm going to ask her for advice. Right. And I asked her, I was like, how can I go from $500,000 to $750,000? And she was like, what? I thought you were going to say $1 million. And I was like, oh, Should it be?
Yeah.
And she's like, yes. I'm like, okay. But yeah, they, you know, the right coaches, the right community, the right, you know, people that you surround yourselves with, they will drag you, but in a good way, right?
Yeah. Rachel did that to us too. I remember we were in a mastermind once and we're like, we want to hit 4 million in 10 years. She's like, what? No, 2 years.
Which I think we could do, but I don't know that I want to do that now, you know, like just knowing what it's taken to get to 1.3 and, you know, we'll see how we end up this year if we hit 2, but just doubling every year is exhausting
yeah.
on some level too. And I think it's okay to like take a beat and really go back to, you know, yes, we absolutely want to scale. And I think we're going to keep going on this journey, but also like we want to do it in a way that feels aligned with who we are.
Love it. Man, I really like you folks. You really do make PR approachable. Like, I feel like if I needed to, you know, hit you up and ask for advice, or if I were to hire you folks, that, yeah, it wouldn't feel yucky. And you would really listen to me, like, I don't want to do this for these reasons. And you would say, okay, well, let's unpack it. So I appreciate you folks taking the time here to chat with me and educating me and helping me unpack my feelings about PR. I am so rooting from the sidelines, watching you, learning about your business and watching the growth. And yeah, knowing that we're part of similar communities. Where can the find folks who are just frothing and excited about Full Swing PR? Where can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, go to fullswingpr.com. If you want to take it a step further, go to fullswingpr.com/get-visible. And there's a really great freebie there for you, get-visible. And then you'll get all the things there. Join our email list. We are not salesy on our email list at all. And it's like one of the most fun pieces of content marketing that we create every week. So get on that list because we really pour a lot into that. You can also find us on Instagram at Full Swing PR and LinkedIn.
I will link to all of those in the notes. And thank you two for coming on. I hope this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Me too.
Let's go roller skating on Venice Beach.
Done.
All right.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paco again. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Weird Finance. If you like the show, you might also like my email newsletter called The Nerd Letter. Every Wednesday, I send out an email with my own insights, along with a curated list of smart, practical articles. Sign up for it at thehellyeahgroup.com or click on the link in the show notes. Thanks again for being a listener. And if you're feeling generous, please do leave us a podcast review. Until next week, take care.